Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Hey, Dog Speak Geeks. I hope your week is going wonderful, and I hope you're getting ready for Christmas. We are just a little shy of 2 weeks away, and I'm excited, and it's going to be absolutely beautiful weather here in Middle Tennessee, so I'm really excited about that, and just really enjoying the holidays, and I hope you guys are doing the same. I have been a little swamped with things. I've been working on my project, which is, it's almost completed. And I will let you guys know about that in January. But it's almost completed. It's not ready for you yet, but it's the first part. First part's almost done. Anyway, I've been really busy, and this has been a really busy month. Usually we're really slow in December just because of the holidays, but we have been super busy. So I'm saying all of that to say I have not had time to record a podcast episode for this week. And honestly, when I sat down to record, I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about because I'm not prepared. And usually I can come off the cuff and just really come up with something, but I just couldn't. I couldn't do it tonight. And I needed to have something for you guys on Tuesday. So I am actually going to let you listen to the keynote conference that I spoke at. And this was a wonderful conference. If you get a chance to do the keynote conference next year, please do so. But this is my interview that I did with them. And so I'm going to post it here so you guys can hear it. And I hope that you enjoy it. And it's funny. It's going to start out because someone else is interviewing me. So it's going to start out like it's their show because, well, it is. But I want you guys to listen to it. And I hope you do enjoy it. And I know you heard the ad prior. But if you've not signed up for our live virtual event for January, for our live Q&A, please do so. There's unlimited tickets. But there's unlimited there's a limit on the questions that we can take and get done in 90 minutes. So if you want to put your question in, it's going to be a first come, first serve. And I won't know how many I can take until I start getting the questions, because that will depend on how long it takes me to answer them, because I'm going to put hopefully some videos and things together for you guys to watch for that. So if you get a chance, go get that ticket so that you don't lose your spot of asking a question and getting that answered in a virtual live event, and you'll get a follow-up question for that. And if you can't make the event, you can get, it will be recorded, so if you do register, you'll get the recording for that. All right, I hope you enjoy. This is the keynote conference. I am actually speaking about the path of least resistance, which is still something I am completely on board about and completely believe in, and want to teach you guys more about finding your path of least resistance. So please enjoy the keynote conference. And next week, I will be back with a full episode with the one and only Patricia McConnell, the author of The Other End of the Leash, which is probably her most well-known book. But she has been around for decades, and she is a wealth of knowledge. And I'm so excited to have her on the podcast. So that will be back next week. Until then, please enjoy.
Hi there, welcome back to the keynote conference. Today we're speaking with Nikki Ivey. Nikki is a fantastic speaker. She has so much knowledge and expertise and the best, most hysterically humorous delivery. I really enjoyed speaking with Nikki. We had a good laugh together. And today she is sharing about how to find the path of least resistance, which is really important in life in general. Life is hard. If we can make it a little bit easier, why wouldn't we? And this is especially important when sharing our lives with our dogs. Enjoy. Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And this is a topic that I'm really excited to get into and to talk about today. So, today we are going to be talking about finding the path of least resistance in our relationships with our dogs. So, where would you like to start? Where's a good place for us to start, do you think?
Well, I think it helping people to understand what I mean by the path of least resistance. In nature, people, we tend to choose the path of least resistance in most things. However, the path of least resistance that most people think they're taking with their pet usually is not the path of least resistance. They're not going to get the results that they're really looking for.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, isn't it, how our brains do that sometimes. We think, oh yeah, this is the direction we should be going in. This looks right.
Absolutely.
And do you think that comes sometimes from kind of societal ideas about dogs? Like, oh, this is what, neighbor down the road did. This is what my parents did with our childhood dogs. Maybe this is what I should be doing. Is that where we're getting it from, do you think?
That really is. And it's about thinking about what the social norms are and what society says our dogs should be doing. And I don't find that that's necessarily true for everyone. I don't think we need to look at social norms or look at what our neighbor's doing or how our neighbor's dog, maybe was sent off to be trained. And that may look like the path of least resistance, but oftentimes it's not the path of least resistance. Not when it comes to creating the relationship that we want with our dog.
It's a really key word, I think, because I think any dog can be trained. We can teach almost any dog to sit in front of us or lie down in front of us. But is that a relationship? Does that build that kind of trust and connection? And I think if you asked most dog parents, not everybody, but most dog parents, what do you want in your relationship with your dog? That's what we want, right? We want that loving connection and bond. We don't just, no one has ever said to me, I want a dog that can sit when I say sit. And I know that's an arbitrary example, but it seems that we want that relationship. And yet, not everyone even thinks about how to go about getting that, right?
Right. They believe that teaching those sit, stay, down, come, heel, if my dog would just do those things, then I know we're going to have a great relationship. And in actuality, that's not the case in a lot of these relationships that we see. Now, if you're working your dog, obviously, if you have a partnership as a working dog, you're going to have some of those. And those are going to be important to the relationship because the relationship's a little different. But for your common house pet, these dogs don't need 40,000 commands. They just need to learn how to kind of follow what's real in their world and not what's real in someone else's world.
Yeah, that's interesting. That kind of individual difference and what makes them who they really are, what they love. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's where it's not conforming to what social society says that we have to have. I see so many times where people say, "Oh, your dog is not a very good dog. He jumps on me." Well, I don't care if my dog jumps at 20 pounds. That to me doesn't tell me if my dog is good or bad, right? It's the relationship that I have with my dog that makes the difference. It's what's important to me, what's important to my dog, and my lifestyle is going to be very different than others. And so, my dog may not need to learn certain things, and their dog may not need to learn certain things in order to have a cohesive, respectful relationship together.
It's in my house. I have ascending high order in my dogs, and my littlest dog is a border collie that never really grew to border collie size. She's tiny. She's like 11 kilos.
Oh,
Now,
wow.
when I come home, she puts her paws up on my legs, and they barely reach my knees, and that's really not an issue. But my Leonberger could put her paws on my head if she wanted to. So that's definitely more problematic. So yeah, kind of adjusting it, like you say, for the
Yes.
dog that you're with seems important, definitely. Are there then thinking about that kind of relationship and how we, I guess, link up training and behavior with relationship? Are there certain things that we can focus on that really help to strengthen that bond and that relationship between us and our dogs?
Absolutely. I think that the biggest is thinking about, first and foremost, the humans have to think about why did I get this dog? What is the purpose of having this dog? What am I expecting from this dog? I like to use myself as an example because I went and got a small dog after I've had Rottweilers for 20 plus years, and I had an idea of what I wanted. And unfortunately, that dog did not meet those needs. And he's still here. He's just now more my wife's dog. And so I had to make sure the first thing is, what am I looking for a dog for my lifestyle? And understanding what that is will help you kind of decide what's important to teach, what's something that I don't need to focus on so much. It's, you know, if you have a family that has a dog and they live on 30 acres and the dog may only be on a leash to go to the vet, then we don't need to spend a bunch of time teaching the dog to walk on leash. You know, that's not, that to me is not the path of least resistance. That is doing something that could be very frustrating with a payoff that you're really not going to have.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Can we look at like a real life example? So maybe let me think of a scenario. I'll use one of my own dogs because that's easier than creating and fabricating a dog in my mind.
Awesome.
So let's say I'm living in a very rural urban setting, central London, well, East London, and I have a dog and I'm going to step out of my front door and that Pyrenean mountain dog, which is what she is going to come into contact with dogs, with people, with kids, with bikes, cars, trains, you name it, she's going to see it. And then when we go to the park, she's also going to come into contact with the wildlife that we have here in the UK. So deer, squirrels, birds, all of those kinds of things. Also thinking about her as a breed, like you would imagine her on a farm, you would imagine her guarding her livestock and barking her head off and all of those kinds of things. Like in that kind of scenario, where could I start that would feel, obviously I've got to think about her as an individual and my needs, but where, what's like an easy place to be like, oh, okay, we could focus on these things for building relationship with that kind of a situation maybe.
Yeah, I think that it's something like that, that the dog that is knowing where their genetics, you know, where they're coming from and what they're genetically bred to do is, if there's a way to find, you know, a place where they can be themselves, even if it's just somewhere where it's quiet, where they just sit and look out over, you know, the resources of the world, those little things of just sitting and being quiet with a dog such as that can make a huge difference. Because if you think about a dog who has maybe genetically bred to be more on the farm, they're not used to all of that noise. And so in that situation, it's hard to say, hey, I'm here and meet those needs in that moment. But if that opportunity comes to where you say, look, I know that this is not the ideal situation right now, but I will give you that so that you can help me in these situations. So it's a really give and take and finding ways to compromise. Right.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, is that compromise, instead of thinking it's either the dog's way or my way. Right. We both have needs. We both have desires. I need a dog who can go and be active with me. I need a dog who can handle me when I get excited during watching sports. But I also want a dog that can hang with me. And sometimes when I want to hang and chill, she does not. So I have to compromise and do those things that she needs in that setting. You know, so that's the biggest. And of course, making sure that your dog understands it, that you are their upper management, you're that tour guide, you got their back, and you'll always keep them safe. That right there is probably the most important part of that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. That feeling like someone has your back, we humans know that, right? If we're in a situation and we have our partner or our friend or our colleague who can step in and you think, oh, thank God, someone's taken that. I don't have to deal with it right now. That's such a sense of relief, right?
Absolutely. Sometimes, you know, my wife asked, where do you want to eat dinner? I'm like, that's too many opportunities. There's too many options. Just break it down for me a couple, and then we can decide, or just you decide, because I don't want to make any more decisions today.
Yeah, that decision fatigue is real, right? It's a real
It really is. It's exhausting.
Yeah, and especially for our anxious dogs, I think that is a feature that we share with them. If, you know, you've got a dog that is a bit environmentally sensitive and they step into a town centre, for example, and I don't know,
I don't know what it is, but in our town centre, there's like a guy with, for the kids, all these balloons. Like he holds, I don't know,
Oh,
100 of them up in the air.
wow.
And for some dogs, it's like, what the heck is that? Like it's moving weird, it's squeaking, they all rub against each other. Like that's sensory overload in and of itself. And then if the dog's got to decide, should I hide? Should I bark? Should I try and get away? Like, should I jump up on my human to get a bit of support? Like you say, that's a lot of decisions, and we can step in there, right, and support them.
Absolutely. And that will help create that relationship of trust, of respect, of know that I don't have to handle it because mom's got it. And mom's got it. And I know that because of what we've built up at home. You know, she's let me make decisions. She's understood my learning history, and she set up my environment in a way that helps me to decompress when I can't handle these things. You know, I have my nice spa room where I can go in with my brown noise and my lick mat, and you know, just away from the outside world, including even the outside world of inside the home, because with multiple animals, it can be hard to get some quiet time.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and it's something that's not actually spoken about that often, I think. Often dog training and behavior, it really centers on your one dog. But I know that thousands of people watching have more than one dog, and if not that, multiple animals and possibly kids and adults as well in the
Oh.
house. So that's a lot, right? There's a lot. It's not always just one person and one dog. I think that's probably more unlikely, actually. There's lots of people have
Absolutely.
multiples. Yeah.
Absolutely. They really do. And that is a, you know, knowing them individually. And as a family dog mediator, we do talk about the legs and understanding the learning history and the environment and the genetics and their self, and really trying to get to know them as an individual and not as, oh, well, you know, yeah, my grandmother had a Rottweiler and this dog was like this, so I have to do this. Or, you know, my buddy down the street, he's got a great border collie and this is what he did, so I'm going to do the same thing. Instead of taking the individualism of that dog and saying, okay, what is it that you really enjoy and what is it that you don't enjoy? And if I need you to do that, how can I help you at least get comfortable in those situations? Because that is the type of relationship we want. We want that give and take. It should never be a 99 and 1%, right? I know that there are times that my dog has that 51% ability to take control of the relationship. I am usually 51% kind of in charge as the upper management, but there are times where I'm like, I don't want to be in charge right now.
Yeah.
I'll be the 49 and I'll let you know if something needs to change. Otherwise, let's just do our thing. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off humans. It takes a lot of pressure off the dogs to realize that we don't have to follow what everyone says. And you know this. And I think the path of least resistance came to me because so many times with my clients, I deal with serious behavior issues on a regular basis, but occasionally I do get the fun stuff. And it's the look on these people's faces when they tell me their dog sleeps in bed with them. And or they're loud on the couch, and they just have this look of, I'm going to get in trouble, right? They're like sitting outside of the principal's office, and I'm just like, I don't care. I don't sleep with you. Okay, so it does not matter to me. Number one, I got to make sure that you're getting good sleep and the dog's getting good sleep. That's more important than where the dog is sleeping. And that's the thing, is that's the path of least resistance. If your dog doesn't want to stay in a crate and they're fine not to be in a crate, why are we forcing it?
Yeah. And that crate example is a perfect one. I had someone just the other day say to me, oh my gosh, I've been trying to crate train my puppy for 4.5 months. And I was like, well, what have you been doing in the meantime if you haven't been putting them in the crate? And they were like, well, they've just been on the bedroom floor. And I was like, and has anything happened? No. Okay,
Nope.
great. So long as we
All
can't
right, you're
access
good.
wires and things that are going to harm us, then we're all good. Yeah,
That's
absolutely.
exactly perfect example of path of least resistance.
Yeah. And like you said, the human side of things is really important here, isn't it? Because so many people want to do it right and perfectly, especially with a puppy. It's like I've got this quote blank slate, which is debatable, but it feels like that, right? I've got this brand new, amazing, gorgeous thing, and I just want everything to be perfect, and I never want to get anything wrong, which is unrealistic. But
Absolutely.
that's when we put all this pressure on ourselves, don't we? And that's when we do almost want to follow the rules, whatever they may be, wherever you found your rules, whether it's something you read on Google, something someone told you, a trainer said. And if we fall off, it can feel really like the end of the world. Whereas it feels like what you're suggesting supports with that a little bit. So we're
Yes.
not in that catastrophe all the time.
Yeah, because people all the time, my clients tell me, they say, I'm not a very good dog owner. And that breaks my heart
Yeah.
because it's like, again, don't be looking outside of your relationship to try to create your relationship, right? I deal with clients who have a many different learning styles. I take that in consideration as well as learning with the dog. I take in their environment and the environments they're going to be in, and also even just their self of, do they have some anxiety that they're dealing with? Okay, if you have anxiety that you're dealing with, then we don't need to go work on exposure with your dog during the, busiest time, down at the hardware store. These are things that we can do in ways that is going to support both the human and the dog to create the relationship that is particular to them, that is their relationship, and it's mutually respectful, and everybody's needs are getting met.
Yeah, so important because it's very easy to pour into another, isn't it? To put yourself on the back burner, don't think about what you need and just be constantly thinking about your dog. I've given this example before. I can't remember if I've done it this year, but it's just banging in this example. So years and years and years ago, I took my dog to a local dog training class. It was not my cup of tea. There was like 70 dogs. It was insane. But crucially, there was one lady and she was in her 90s and she had a Chihuahua who I think was probably in some cognitive decline. This dog was really old and apparently it would only go to the toilet at 4 a.m. So she, at 90 years old, was walking through the streets of London at 4 o'clock in the morning because that was the only time her dog would go to
Wow.
the toilet. And I mean, is that good for either of them? Clearly, there's something going on
Right?
for the dog, clearly, but also the safety aspect, like all of it.
Right.
And that's an extreme example, but I think we do tie ourselves up in knots, really trying to, yeah, like we said before, find help the dog and support the dog. And we do need to do that, but you've got to look after yourself as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's like I love to use the example of cars. It's like you can have a beautiful car with a great paint job and beautiful tires on them, but if the engine is not taken care of, then you're going to struggle. And really, the human is the engine. And you can have this great dog, but if we don't take care of that engine and make sure that the human is getting those needs met, and that's part of finding out what the human needs from the dog so that we can help figure out how that's going to look so that, again, they're getting their needs met. I needed a dog who is going to be my ride or die, my cuddle buddy. Well, Myers, the little 20 pounder, he's not. He was not. And, so I was like, that's part of my rejection trauma. I got rejected by the dog, so that started affecting me. And I thought, I'm going to find a dog that is going to meet that need. And I went back to the Rottweiler breed. And she's 6 months, and she is everything that I was looking for, and she's meeting those needs, and I'm learning about her and what she enjoys or doesn't enjoy, so that we can create that relationship that will last for all those wonderful years and bring joy to both myself and to her, but also to people that can see us together.
That last bit's really interesting, isn't it? Because you do spark joy in other people when they see a lovely relationship. It's like anything, like those gorgeous videos that we see on Instagram of like unlikely animal pairings that are buddies, and it
Yes,
just brings joy
I
to
love
you.
it.
So absolutely, it's for your dog, it's for you, but it's also for, everyone around you as well, which is really cool. And I think that's a really lovely example that you just gave there of being honest with yourself and saying, I need a cuddly dog. I need
Yes.
that. And we're not currently got that in this relationship. So when I bring in my next dog, I'm going to focus on that. I'm going to really look for that.
Absolutely. I tell people, he broke up with me. He realized that this relationship was not going to work. We're still friends. And and I think many people do believe that once they get into a relationship with a dog that they are stuck and that what they see is what they get. But truly, there are ways to compromise. And he still lives here. We're still buddies, but he's not my ride or die because frankly, I think he'd rather die than ride. And so I don't know if I'm just a bad driver, but it's one of those that I have learned to kind of reset my expectations with him so that we still have a relationship. It's not the relationship I was needing, but it's still a relationship that is positive. I just had to make sure I got a new one to get that full on Roddy love that I needed.
Yeah, they're very good at that, aren't they? And they're
Very
just
good.
so much of them to cuddle is epic.
I love it.
Yeah. It's really funny though, going back to what you said a few minutes ago about dogs sleeping in the bed. So when I'm out with my big polar bear, it's a 50-50 split. Some people say, oh my gosh, I wouldn't want her on the bed. And then some people say, oh gosh, she must be amazing to cuddle in winter. And I'm like, she is. And the best bit is in summer, she gets hot. So I don't overheat because she gets off. It's just
Yes.
the win-win.
Yep,
Everyone's
absolutely.
happy. Yeah.
It
Brilliant.
does. It makes a difference to find out what does work for you, right? If you feel better, people do tell me, I feel better when my dog's sleeping in bed. Then let your dog sleep in the bed,
Yeah.
right? You may have to get a bigger bed, but
Yeah.
let your dog sleep in the bed.
It's like you see these clever beds that have like little add-ons where the dog kind of goes on the
Yes.
side. My staffie would be like, yeah, you can go there if you want, mum, but
Yeah,
I am in
you can lay
the
there.
middle. I'm starfish. Yeah. But I
That's
suppose
fantastic.
this would also relate to, let's say you kind of your average dog parent that takes their dog to like a local class or is working with someone online. And maybe the class is structured in such a way where week one you learn this, week two you learn that, and you kind of build on those skills over 6 weeks, for example. It can feel really hard if your dog is the only one in the class, be it face to face or online, that just can't or won't or doesn't want to do it, that is head in the clouds, or maybe is quite stressed and upset, and you feel yourself getting quite embarrassed and awkward, especially if it's the kind of class where it's one person at a time and you're just thinking, oh gosh, it's my turn and he's not going to do it, that kind of
Yep.
thing. It seems like this kind of methodology would be super helpful there because it would allow space to think, is this the right class for my dog and I? Or is there a way to work with the instructor so this could be different? Am I right in thinking that we could kind of use this in the same way for that kind of scenario?
Yeah, absolutely. When we were doing group classes, it's reframing the guardian's idea of the class and what they want out of the class. If we can reframe that to say, you know what, look, your dog doesn't need to be, know how to sit. They know how to sit, right? Right now, let's look at what's important to you. And it's asking that client, what do you really want to get out of this class, right? And that's what we can focus on. And if what they want to get out is unrealistic, we'll help them compromise and try to find, pieces of that that we can work on. But always letting them know that, hey, every dog is going to work at a different level, and the importance of what you're asking is going to be very different. I would laugh at our Pyrenees that would come to class, and I'd be like, you could just forget asking them to sit. They were bred to literally not listen to a thing you say. So what you need to get out of this class is more of, X, Y, and Z. And that helps take some of that pressure off when they realize that their dog isn't just middle finger them all the time saying, I don't want to do it. It's genetically, they just don't have what you want them to have for that. And I think when you start to really educate clients on the genetic predisposition of the dog that they have and looking past the beautiful looks of them, they start to understand that what they're seeing is normal and that sometimes they do have to kind of reevaluate those expectations of the relationship, right? And so many times, like, I want my dog to fetch. Like, you're not going to get that dog to fetch. That dog is a guardian breed. It may go chase the ball once and bring it back and appease you for that. But why are you spending that time doing something? I thought about that when I was raising my niece, and she was 12, 13, 14. I wanted her to play softball. And I tried everything to get her to play softball. She was terrible. Okay, she was terrible. She must have gotten her dad's, athletic ability, which is none. And I had to kind of adjust my expectations and find out what was important to her. And she wanted it to be important to her because she wanted that for me. But no one was enjoying it. And so when we come together and say, hey, what do you really enjoy? And that has made a huge difference in that relationship and her being able to communicate to me those things that she needed and wanted because she knew that she wouldn't be, I wouldn't be upset if it was something. And I think that if we can take that same attitude towards our dogs, it can make a huge difference in that relationship. And instead of sometimes even sitting back and saying, this is the exact relationship I want, sometimes just sit back and say, here's some pieces I want, but I'm gonna enjoy this ride and see what beauty comes out. It's like planting a bulb and not knowing what color that flower is gonna be.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. What a lovely place to stop. I think that will
Oh,
really, really stay with people. Yeah, absolutely. Just before we go, tell us first about your freebie, if you will.
yeah, so the path of least resistance, I have a webinar that we are actually recording this week, and I will have that free to all the listeners out there, and they can find that through the links. And then we'll also have a 25% off discount code for any of our other online material.
Amazing. That's really generous. Thank you. And where are the best places for people to follow you, see what you're doing?
Well, we're on all the social media channels pretty much. So dogspeak101.com is our website. From there, you can pretty much find us anywhere, Instagram, TikTok, of course, Facebook, all the fun places.
All the good places. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed it, and it's lovely to have you.
Thank you so much. I had a blast.